morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. Hope your week is going well so far. If you're not familiar with my show, you can head over to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. So standing by is trauma therapist Maggie Neck, and she's author of Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. She is joining us now. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
So I this book for me is really timely. I feel like so many people of all ages are suffering, post-pandemic especially. But I want to jump in and ask you, what sparked this idea for Good Kids?
Oh, boy. So I was a raging good kid. I was the child nobody ever needed to worry about. Always well behaved, never caused any trouble. And in healing myself and trying to figure out what was wrong with me, basically, it was a big quest to figure out why there was something fundamentally wrong with me. Spoiler alert, there wasn't, but I just thought there was. and then in my work with clients and with therapy clients, it was like I couldn't understand why I was struggling so much when on paper I was crushing life. I had a great job. I was a social worker. I was helping all these people.
Yeah.
And when I started pulling on that thread, what I kept seeing over and over again in myself and in my therapy clients was this same pattern. People who were capable, high achieving, the kindest person you've ever met, and completely falling apart inside.
Is it that a lot of people walk around just ignoring internally what's going on and they're go, go, go?
I think we were trained to ignore it, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the ignoring was by design.
Yes.
To make us easier to parent.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's these misguided beliefs that have been handed down generation after generation. And that's really the big issue when we zoom out, is that for generations, like parents have been told the kids should be capable of never misbehaving and that we should, as parents, have zero tolerance for big feelings and that it's our job as parents to punish our kids until they stop misbehaving, right? Teach them how to be respectful. And they're just, it's very problematic when we punish kids the way we were all punished and make kids feel like there's something wrong with them for the pushback.
And don't
It's like, Go ahead.
I was going to say, don't you think it sets them up for example, when they go off to college to just completely let loose?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
What does good mean to you?
You mean in terms of good kid?
Yes.
I think the way I describe good kids is that it's that kid who's easy to parent, who's so mature and so responsible, they don't even really need to be disciplined. Right. And everybody assumes they're fine. And on the outside, they look like they're fine. And they sometimes work really hard to convince others that they're fine. But they're often very not fine inside. Yeah. And that's actually the kid I worry about most as a therapist.
Sure. I mean, and you've got to be seeing so many pressures right now on kids. Do you want to share that?
I do. I think a lot of my work with kids and adults in my counseling practice is helping them realize that they are hustling to prove their goodness and try to impress everybody with how much they can carry and how little they break a sweat, right? Anybody else would buckle under the pressure of all I'm carrying, but look, I'm great. And this like crushing belief that they can't ever need anything from anybody. They can't need support.
Sure.
Needing support is failure. Yeah. And I think so many of us grew up believing we had to be that way, and a lot of us really did kind of have to be that way to stay in our parents' good graces. And then we become an adult and we don't know how to say no without going into a panic. You know, we feel like our actual life is in danger at the thought of somebody being mad at us.
Yes.
Like it follows us and we spend our lives recovering.
I had a conversation with someone one time and he was saying, oh, my niece is a 4.6. She plays sports. She does this, that. She's perfectly fine. And I'm thinking, do you really know her? I mean, because a lot of times that's just a facade, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Those are the kids my kind of ears perk up. I'm like, oh, we have a good kid. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this is all about. I'm really on a revolution to really turn this on its head. We think that good kids is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. We tend to see a child who's always well-behaved as a huge success and a sign of good parenting. And the problem is often those kids are holding everything together on the outside. Yes. But quietly falling apart. They feel like they can never relax and let their guard down. Yes. They're so hard on themselves. Even when they succeed, they are picking it apart.
Terrible.
They're, you know, automatically going to what they should have done better. They're not even able to enjoy the moment and be proud of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They feel anxious and on edge all the time. They assume they're in trouble. They assume people are mad at them. The moment somebody, you know, doesn't text back quickly enough. Mm-hmm. They worry about disappointing people and letting people down. A lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. So what do you say to parents who, you know, they want to focus on being, you know, good parents, but these kids, these good kids are just full of trauma? Like, how do you unpack that?
Yeah, I do want to say, and I'm a parent of two, my kids are 8 and 11, so I'm in right in the trenches with you all. So many of us are just really doing the best we can. And I think I hear from a lot of parents that they were the good kid and they suffered in silence and they're seeing their kid going down that same path and they're like, help, oh my gosh. So I wrote a book for you to help you with all of this, to help you heal yourself and like figure out how this good thing happened for you. And then the last third of the book is all about, you know, parenting, because we really do have to unlearn so many things from our childhood. Like, we will become parents and we will praise our kids for never misbehaving because that's the world we were raised in,
mm-hmm.
right? We will praise them when they never need help, right? And we will accidentally teach them that struggling isn't welcome, right? Mm-hmm. We'll shut down every sign of disappointment, or excuse me, every sign of disrespect
mm-hmm.
and defiance. And we'll accidentally and unintentionally and with the best of intentions make it so our kids feel like they have to bottle everything and be fine on the outside.
Yeah.
You know, we do have to dismantle some of these misguided beliefs that have been handed down generation after generation. And a lot of what we call respect and the way that our parents really worked hard to teach us to be respectful is really fear and mm-hmm. like blind obedience and dominating a child into submission to us. Yeah. Kids learn to obey not because they respect us, but because they're scared of what will happen if they don't.
Terrible.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we have to unlearn all that. We really do have to kind of shift away. And a lot of parents are in the process of doing that. And there's so many of us trying to break these cycles. And I do think there are some parenting strategies that slide more into permissive parenting. And mm-hmm. I don't support permissive parenting at all. I think people are generally kind of shocked when they hear me talk about what kind of boundaries. Like, kids don't need fewer boundaries. They don't need softer boundaries. They need better boundaries. Like, kids need a parent who can be a confident and loving leader, not a confident and punishing mm-hmm. leader, who can say no and hold it no matter what comes next. And a parent who can see inside to the inherent goodness of that child, even in the moments the kids are being obnoxious. It's not fun, right? It's exhausting. But like, when kids are pushing back, when kids are being disrespectful, they are dysregulated. Yeah. Their brain is disorganized right now. Their impulse control has been profoundly undermined. They don't know why they're screaming these things at you. They mm-hmm. don't know why they're hitting you. They don't know. And they already feel bad about it. And so what we need is to have non-negotiable boundaries, right, that I'm not going to let you hit, I'm not going to let you do that,
mm-hmm.
but not punish kids for the struggle, because that's how kids release stress and regulate.
Sure.
The resistance is how they release stress and regulate.
I always feel that we have to get to the root of why they're angry. I mean, I always saw this in my own work, that anger, sometimes the root is fear or hurt or trauma or something, and so it's important to take a breath and not jump at them. And reflect back anger for something, you know, we don't know what their day was like. Maybe something happened on social media, or, you know, there's so much going on social media. And so I feel like we need to dial into some empathy and compassion because I feel it's so hard, Maggie, as you know, growing up right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, and 100% on anger being the surface and there being so much underneath. Mm-hmm. I do find that shame tends to be the deepest layer, you know?
Yeah.
Really, I call it good kid trauma, but it's really, the clinical term is relational shame trauma. Mm. So it's shame trauma, being made to feel like who you are deep down inside is something to be ashamed of and not worthy of love.
Yeah.
And then relational means it happens inside the relationship between the parent and the child. And then we carry our childhood into every relationship, you know, from there. Mm-hmm. And so it's really this trying to learn how to say, I don't stand by what you did, but I will always stand by you. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like saying, I know you and I know this vicious behavior, which whenever kids are vicious, they're in shame. Like human beings, when they are mm-hmm. vicious, aggressive, mean, they're in shame right now.
Interesting.
And so I know you, and I know that this behavior isn't who you really are. Mm-hmm. You are going to have to make this right, and you're going to have to face the consequences of your actions. But you won't have to do that alone, because you and I are good. Like, I'm here, and I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the big shift that changes everything.
Yeah. So interesting. So what would you say to college students who are listening at UC Irvine that can resonate with the pressure they feel?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, and I think so many good kids really have had excessive pressure put on them, you know? Like,
definitely.
They really are held to just higher and unrelenting expectations. And when they did struggle, that struggle was more likely to be met with, mm-hmm. like, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. What is wrong with you? Mm. More pressure.
Guilt.
And so I think when that's paired with feeling like your parents' attention, mm-hmm. their approval, and their love was tied to being good and never misbehaving and never needing anything and making them proud, it really, we carry this very like crushing core belief that, like, I must be good to be loved.
Right.
The most lovable version of me is always fine. And never needs anything from anyone, and is always impressive. And so for college kids who've just left the home and you're on your own for the first time, this is going to, I mean, if you haven't already been body slammed by all of this, it's coming, right?
Right.
Because it's your first time being out on your own. And so I think just, I find with a lot of my clients, just bringing this to the surface and saying this, for
yes.
so many of us, this is, you know, these wounds have never been addressed. No, we've never felt seen in this. Nobody's ever put words to this.
Right.
And so be aware that you're going to hold yourself to insane expectations of what this should look like and how much you should be allowed to struggle and how hard this should be for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And like, that's all nonsense. Like, that
Definitely.
Is the same stuff from childhood and being held to that higher expectation when your brother, the problem child, you know, is misbehaving all day. But
mm-hmm.
I expected more from you, right? You're going to bring that same energy into your relationship with yourself. But you deserve to allow yourself to be a whole person who has good days and bad days.
That's right.
And you deserve to be proud of what you've done and be able to accept your wins.
Yes.
Right? And be proud of yourself.
Yeah. When I think of, is again, like the 4.6 student, the one who puts so much pressure on themselves, I feel that they are doing this also because they want the love and the acceptance and the attention from the parent. And they might have a sibling that completely acts up all the time and maybe they get all the attention. But by them putting so much pressure and, you know, the AP classes and et cetera, which I could never relate to because I was not a good kid. but I feel that that's one of the problems, that that they put so much pressure because they want to be nurtured and loved.
Yep. I mean, I really do think so many of us, and for the record, the kids who are the, you know, quote, bad kid, the problem child,
mm-hmm.
and the kids who sort of floated in between good kid and bad kid,
mm-hmm.
That's a way oversimplification, but it does sort of track. You know, all of us are just kind of come into adulthood believing that unless we're being impressive right now,
yes,
we're not lovable. Like, it really is that, like, that sounds so harsh, but that when we peel all the layers back, like that is often the very deepest layer, is that I must be impressive in order to be acceptable, in order to be worthy of love and care. Yeah. Like a version of me that's struggling, a version of me that's tired, right? Of course, we're not tired, we're lazy, right? Like we've mm-hmm. got to always put the shame on. I'm tired today, but then we have to be like, why are you being so lazy? Like, it's actually very human to have days where you have more energy and less energy. Like,
that's right.
We don't have to bring morality into this. And, like, I think this compulsive need to try to be good and never be bad, it just really gets in there and follows us. But we deserve, you know, to, like, we deserve to be whole people.
Yes.
Who have good days and bad days and needs and preferences. And we deserve to be able to be in a funk without feeling like we have to fix it right away, because what would people think if they saw us like
yes.
that?
But let's also think about parents must model this behavior. So if they're constantly busy and not connecting with their kid and fostering, you know, emotional health, you're just going to set the standard. You're setting mm-hmm. the bar for how they should behave, how they should act, and maybe in the future how they will parent.
100%. And that's really the first two-thirds of the book is about what happened mm-hmm. and how to heal, you know, because we do really have to go back for the parts of us that maybe, you know, I hear all the time, but I had a great childhood. So mm-hmm. I wrote a whole section of the book about it, because I would have said the same thing and did. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a terrible childhood, but there, for so many of us, there are parts of us in childhood that things looked good on the outside, but things weren't so good on the inside. But we had to pretend that they were.
Yes.
And so we deserve to go back for that, right? Like I write in the book about how when my daughter was needy as a little girl, my oldest, mm-hmm. it triggered me up and down. It was so hard, right? And I had to really go back for that part of me when I was needy.
Oh.
And how I was made to feel like this version of you is unacceptable.
Mm.
And like, you know, this, I better never see this side of you again.
Ugh.
That kind of vibe, right? Like the parts of me that feel the most unlovable are going to be the hardest parts in my child to love. And we really do, I think reparenting can feel intimidating and scary, but it's really just about giving ourselves the comfort, the care, the reassurance that we matter,
mm-hmm.
right? That we needed but didn't really consistently get growing up.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Oof.
Standing by ourselves.
Parenting is not easy. They don't come with directions.
Amen. Amen. This, I really did try to put a handbook together, though, for this. So I really hope that it helps. And I think even if you're not a parent, so many of my college-age kids read my parenting posts because they're like, ah, oh, this is how it should have gone. This is what I needed. And now I can see the difference. You know, yeah. I can see the disparity between what I got and what I actually needed.
Definitely.
So I highly recommend everybody read the whole book, even if you're not a parent, because it is going to shed some light on things and help you see things more clearly, you know, help yeah. identify some of the places where we need healing.
Absolutely. Was there a challenge to writing this book?
Oh my gosh. It tore me up.
Tell me more about
Very emotional. Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I am obsessed with healing. I'm a therapist, but I'm also a lifelong therapy client. Not lifelong, we're 20 years about now. And so it was like I healed through writing this book. And so mm-hmm. there would be something I was working on. And it just felt like the universe was like putting me in situations and in conversations that just would cut me so deep.
Mm.
And then as I would heal, I knew what I was meant to write next. And so there were a lot of tears writing this book. But healthy tears, like the good kind of tears, the tears that made little me feel so seen. And
that's
like little me could take a deep breath. Like I feel like I really did shed all the layers of believing that I was hard to love and a burden
Aww.
And unlovable and, right, like that there was something wrong with me. Like I feel like I shed all of that. I don't know if I'll ever fully shed it, but did a lot of work to shed a lot of that. So that I do feel like I love myself. I believe that I'm lovable as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I truly do now believe
That's
that
good.
And very excited to give everybody else the roadmap for how to get there.
So I do have a question. Have you ever said to your kids or said to someone, a parent, the goal shouldn't be pushing your kids to get A's, because what's more important than that?
I have said some version of that.
Okay.
I have, do I have a minute to explain a tool that I have?
Yes,
that I
go
use?
Ahead. Go ahead.
So I have what I call the Heart Smile Board, and it's on my kitchen wall. We have a chalkboard painted on the wall. And I started it just for me, and then it became a whole thing, and now I have a workshop about it to show you how to do it. But I just knew that I needed to, just like you said, model this, like that I was modeling people-pleasing and perfectionism, and my oldest is so perceptive. And so I would put a heart smile on the board every time I would take care of myself, every time I would say no, every time I would consider, what do I need, right? And and then obviously it exploded into setting boundaries and disappointing others instead of disappointing myself. And the heart smile board has become a whole thing. But it's so important that we teach our kids, you know, and live that way so that they are raised in a world where that's what people do.
Right.
Like people say, I actually am not up for that. Like, I know we agreed to that, but I'm not feeling up to it and I need to cancel without, you know, losing 36 hours of their life to anxiety about sending that text, you know?
Yeah. I have a friend who said to me that she shares with her child, C's get degrees. So, you know, even if you are struggling in this class, a C will get you that degree.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other, it is, because I was definitely not an A student, sometimes barely a B. And we don't know, you know, what's going on in someone's head, but to put so much pressure on, I know that the model is get A's, take APs, do really well in your SATs, get into a good school. But but higher education has set the bar so high. I've even heard of students going abroad because it's not realistic for them anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I totally lost your question. So circling back to that, the Heart Smile Board, the reason I was saying that is because it's the only like chart, behavioral chart that I support as a therapist and a parenting expert.
Okay.
Because what it does when we do it with our kids is to say, thank you for taking care of yourself. We're praising kids for taking care of themselves. I say to my kids, thank you for listening inside and telling me how it feels for you.
Love it.
Thank you for telling me what you need.
Yeah.
Right? Like when my son doesn't want to hug and we'll, you know, we're not right by the heart smile board. I'll be like, hey, do you want a hug? And he's like, no. And then he'll go, I get a heart smile, right? Like, yeah, you do. Like, that's the vibe. Let's raise kids to praise them louder when they take care of themselves and listen inside and tell other people what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cheer louder for that than ACE.
Yes, absolutely. I often will ask students, how are you really? And then people kind of take that big, like, well, because they feel like there's actually somebody that wants to listen. And I feel that we could apply what you're saying to other age groups, to parents that want to rethink how they want to move forward with their relationships, not just with their growing kids, but with their colleagues.
100%.
Yeah.
I love that.
Maggie, where can people find out more about you?
MaggieNick.com, and I'm on the social media sites as Maggie with Perspectacles.
I love that.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I want to thank you so much. Congratulations on your book. It just came out January 27th. I've been speaking with Maggie Nick, author of Good Kids, Why You Suffered in Silence and How to Break the Cycle. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I love this conversation.
Fantastic. I'll be in touch, and I'll send you a link.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Again, that was Maggie Nick. If you missed any part of this, this will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. It'll go on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. All of Maggie's information about her book is on the show blog now. If you're not familiar with KUCI, you can head over to kuci.org. We have our incredible mix of talent here at the station, public affairs, music shows, and more. I had a chance to see The Notebook last week. I went to opening night. It was fantastic. There's a review on the homepage of kuci.org. Connor Richardson, who is in the show, called into my show, I believe it was last week, and that was stellar. And if you want to find out about being a guest, you can send me an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at kuci.org. So I am going to be in conversation with someone from Project Hope, and chances are you haven't heard of Project Hope, but Project Hope, I first heard about from my grandmother, and I just heard about it as a medical ship, and my grandmother was in Newton, Massachusetts, and she would raise annual funds for Project Hope. And Project Hope was a hospital ship, still is, called SS Hope, and it brings teaching and medical programs to developing nations. And my grandmother had gone to Tunisia and other countries visiting the medical staff and the patients. She had a huge heart. And so over the summer, I happened to be somewhere and I turn the corner where we were and I see Project Hope. And I thought, this is a sign. And so I am so thrilled. I'm going to be in conversation with Stacy Amon Yadel, and she'll correct me if I completely messed up her name. And she's joining us around 9:30, and this is going to be a great conversation. I actually brought some of my grandmother's memorabilia from being on the ship and traveling, so I'm really excited for that. So stick around for that at 9:30. We'll take a little break. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.